next step.
When a group of zealots preach extremism and the overthrow of our modern Western society, espousing ancient beliefs of violence, retribution, and might, what happens when this heavily armed sect wants to destroy our values and blow up our laws with multiple attacks? What happens when their leaders spout anti-U.S. sermons and enable their adherents to arm themselves and carry out attacks on the homeland? What happens when the leaders of the self recruit a growing number of followers with minds warped by fear and a disturbingly paranoid doctrine? A doctrine that twists the teachings and laws of revered prophets into an unrecognizable, violent new form. What happens when they begin forcing their beliefs into every part of our daily lives? What happens when followers with minds poisoned by these teachings attack American soft targets on a regular basis, then move to attack our very system of justice? What happens? You send them your membership dollars, accept their campaign contributions, and implement Sharia gun rights legislation. The National Rifle Association is not, repeat, not a jihadi organization. Follow them with all of your heart and do what they ask of you.
Across the country, more and more people are switching to fetal position desks so that they can curl up in a ball on the floor while they work. Aaron Vaughn has a story.
I'm here at the offices of Slash Forward Marketing, one of the many companies where employees are throwing out their chairs in favor of working from the fetal position. Wellness experts say it's the best way to stay healthy and productive at work.
The human body isn't meant to sit at a desk for 6 to 7 hours. The natural position, especially in the workplace, is to shut down completely, return to a womb-like state, and rock back and forth to soothe yourself.
A new study shows that the healthiest way to deal with the penetrating drudgery of the workday is to work from a comfortable surface with your back curved, head tucked in, and your arms wrapped around you to block out the outside world.
To arm themselves and carry out attacks on the homeland.
I work at a computer. Sitting in a chair, I found that my neck would hurt, my back would hurt. I'd spend full days watching the minutes of my life slip away.
Company president Robert Bettendorf says the trend is catching on with his employees.
We found that before we switched over to these desks, employees were already assuming the fetal position throughout the day.
Session in the Oval Office. Lawmakers reportedly pressured the president to force Iraq Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki to step down over what they see as his failure to rein in the sectarian strife. But it's fueling the Sunni insurgency now down on Baghdad.
Decade, the CIA has fought al-Qaeda in all ways possible, using satellites, ground troops, drone strikes, and it even briefly considered using action figures. The Washington Post reports that in 2005, the CIA began Project Devil Eyes to create evil-looking Osama bin Laden action figures in hopes of turning parents and children away from the real bin Laden.
Militants threaten to strengthen their control today over the nation's largest oil refinery. struggled to explain her vote for the Iraq War during the 2008 campaign, has now admitted it was plainly a mistake.
And I wanted to make clear in this book, especially in the context of my thinking about what I would recommend to President Obama concerning additional troops in Afghanistan, that I did get it wrong in Iraq, and it was a mistake.
Glenn Beck, generally no fan of the left, just came out and said this.
They said we couldn't force freedom on people. You know what? Let me lead with my mistakes. You're right. Liberals, you were right. We shouldn't have.
Liberals, you were right. Tom Friedman, who once went on television and told Iraqis, quote, suck on this. Tom Friedman wrote in today's New York Times that now is not the time to reinvade Iraq. Heck, even John Bolton, one of the most rabid advocates for militarism of the whole bunch, thinks we should stay out of it. And then there are what you might call the dead-enders, to borrow a phrase, the people who have dealt with the sheer magnitude of what they have brought by simply double down. Their method of coping with how badly they got it wrong is to scream even louder that they are right, because to allow a little bit of truth to work its way in would annihilate their entire sense of the world's order and their place in it. We've seen this from Bush-era officials like Paul Bremer and Paul Wolfowitz, Senators John McCain and Lindsey Graham, and commentators like Bill Kristol. But at the top of this list, the top of all lists when it comes to the Iraq debacle, is of course this man and his ne'er-do-well daughter.
Al-Qaeda is resurgent, establishing new safe havens across the Middle East, including in Iraq, where President Obama withdrew all American forces with no stay-behind agreement.
Former Vice President Dick Cheney and his daughter Liz announcing they're founding a new organization to advance their vision for American foreign policy. Just let that sink in for a second. They also wrote a Wall Street Journal op-ed condemning President Obama's approach to Iraq. And it's unclear, I have to say, whether or not they meant it to be a self-parody. It actually includes lines like this. Rarely has a U.S. president been so wrong about so much at the expense of so many. You see the spectacle of Dick Cheney weighing in on Iraq, and on one level, it feels like a just society would have done something formal to sanction this person for what he did and place him outside the bounds of polite society. But in the absence of that, at least we can take comfort in the fact that this man is speaking from a low mountainside in a funny hat, rather than from the Oval Office at the president's side. This is a man whose family name has been so tarnished, so discredited, he couldn't get his own daughter through a primary campaign in his own party in his own home state.
All right, everybody. Hey, listen. Thanks for listening to Micro Power Radio. I'm Furious George signing in. Just letting you know I'm here with DJ Eddie Abbey and DJ Hal B. Hurton. And I'm yours truly, Furious G. We are playing some craziness. This is some DJ, or some, I think his name is DJ John Wayne. It's a mixtape called The Daytime Naps. Some weird stuff. And then, of course, in the background, layered in there, some DJ Sam I Am and Flying Lotus together, an offbeat mixtape they made. There's that there. And who knows what we're going to be spotting tonight, which potentially may be offensive to some members of our listening audience. If you happen to be some other person in our audience, check out furiousg.blogspot.com, where you'll learn all about the old shows. And check out WCOM FM. Support Micropower Radio. Do what you're doing right now. Keep on listening, and we'll try to entertain. Stick around. I'm Furious.
Want to make your very own caliphate? It's easier than you think with Create Your Own Caliphate. Just follow these handy steps and you'll be on your way to your very own brutal Islamic society. First, get the superpower out of the way with a lie-based war followed by a bogged-down occupation. Next, make sure they dismantle all existing security and police so that personnel can go on to sow chaos. See to it that your Shiite opposition is installed into power and propped up with massive financial and military support. Make sure the Prime Minister is an unrepentant sectarian who consolidates his power with cronies while bestowing more titles on himself. And be happy when your sect gets squeezed out of all those positions of power and influence. Don't worry, it means you're getting closer to your caliphate. Meanwhile, practice your fighting skills on the occupying forces. The skills you learn doing that will come in handy later. Make some sharp outfits that match your flag. Revel in the fact that your enemy is getting billions in military hardware. That neat stuff may be yours before you know it. Hone your fighting and Sharia skills next door. That Syrian territory will make a nice addition to your caliphate, too. Once corruption and discontent fester long enough, come back to good old Iraq and take over vast swaths of the country with ease.
Naturally wanted to do.
Fetal position desks, which are even popping up in offices like Google and Facebook, come in a variety of shapes and sizes. Some have adjustable height so you can cower underneath them, while more expensive options include a warm, pulsating blanket for workers to wrap themselves in to feel calm. But many people are making their own.
I've rigged this up so I can type comfortably and my arms won't get tired. Plus, it's got speakers so I can listen to a comforting voice saying shh over and over again.
saying, and therefore very significant to the three organizations that are working together. ISIS, the military council, which is made up of former Iraqi army people, and then the Naqshbandiya movement.
The doll's face was painted with a heat-dissolving paint designed to peel away and reveal a red-faced, green-eyed bin Laden who looks a bit like a demon. The CIA recruited former Hasbro executive Donald Levine for the project. Levine, best known for creating G.I. Joe, was brought in for his industry contacts in China. Propaganda isn't exactly a new tool for the CIA, though. For example, during the Cold War, the agency published a novel from a popular Russian writer and spread it throughout the country in hopes of sowing unrest in the USSR. And earlier this year, the Obama administration acknowledged the CIA built Zunzaneo, a social media site meant to be a copy of Twitter aimed at Cubans. However, it denied claims that the site was an attempt to overthrow the government, but insisted it was to encourage political discussion.
We know now that as human beings busy themselves about their various concerns, they were scrutinized and studied, perhaps almost as narrowly as a man with a microscope might scrutinize the transient creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
He had to go back to the drawing board to find her another job, which he's apparently achieved by starting this new organization. And of course, no accounting for this psychodrama, this spectacle of elites reckoning with the horror of what they did, would be complete without this man, who, to his credit recently, has seen fit to offer no more wisdom, dispense no more advice, and simply spend his days in Texas trying to paint his soul clean. Joining me now, James Fallows, national correspondent for The Atlantic. A strange kind of meta debate has erupted as we've watched the situation in Iraq descend into chaos, and it's everything that's happening there, it's very hard to find good silver linings in the actual situation on the ground there. The conversation politically here about who has standing in this debate, and there are people making the argument that, hey, you can't just constrain the boundaries of debate. People lose, and people might have been wrong once before. They might be right again. What do you say to that?
Well, I had some experience with this. I put out a fairly ill-considered tweet a couple days ago saying, how about this as a working hypothesis? If you stump for the war, maybe we don't need your advice now. Like all this mail from people saying, oh, it's the Stalag, you're going to lock up people who disagree. That's not my point. My point is that if you were really grossly in error on this particular topic, on the likely consequences of military operations in this country, then at least you should have a little bit of deference or a little bit of reticence in saying, okay, I was wrong then, but for other reasons, I think, you know, I can make a point now. So I think at least in the last couple of days, there's been some kind of shock awareness of why we are listening to Crystal, Wolfowitz, and Bremer opine on what to do in Iraq.
Now take a break to watch foreigners blame each other for your success. You've earned. Sharia skills next door. That Syrian territory will make a nice addition to your caliphate too. Once corruption and discontent fester long enough, come back to good old Iraq and take over vast swaths of the country with ease. Now take a break to watch foreigners blame each other for your success. You've earned it. Enjoy witnessing painfully awkward new alliances. Congratulations! Your caliphate is just around the corner. Now sit back, relax, and have a miserable theocratic existence.
Mimsies in a bargain of ghosts, the moon of the grave.
near the end of October. Business is better. War scare was over. More men were back at work. Sales were picking up. On this particular evening, October 30th, the Crosley Service estimated that 32 million people were listening in on radio.
Plaza Hotel in New York City, we bring you the music of Raymond Raquello and his orchestra.
BTSRadio.net.
With minds poisoned by these teachings, attack American soft targets on a regular basis, then move to attack our very system of justice. What happens? You send them your membership dollars, accept their campaign contributions, and implement Sharia gun rights legislation.
That's not my point. My point is that if you were really grossly in error on this particular topic, on the likely consequences of military operations in this country, then at least you should have a little bit of deference or a little bit of reticence in saying, okay, I was wrong then, but for other reasons, I think, you know, that this I can make a point now. So I think at least in the last couple of days, there's been some kind of shock awareness of why we're listening to Kristol, Wolfowitz, and Bremer opine on what to do in Iraq.
Pearson stands directly above me on a small platform, peering through the giant lens. I ask you to be patient, ladies and gentlemen, during any delay that may arise during our interview. Besides the ceaseless watch of the heavens, Professor Pearson may be interrupted by telephone or other communication. During this period, he is in constant touch with the astronomical centers of the world. Professor, may I begin our questioning?
Any time, Mr. Foote.
Professor, would you please tell our radio audience exactly what you see as you observe the planet Mars through your telescope?
Nothing unusual at the moment, Mr. Phillips. A red disk swimming in a blue sea.
Pearson has passed me a message which he has just received. Professor, may I read the message to the listening audience?
Certainly, Mr. Brooks.
Ladies and gentlemen, I shall read you a wire addressed to Professor Pearson from Dr. Gray of the Natural History Museum, New York. Quote, 9:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Seismograph registered shock of almost earthquake intensity occurring within a radius of 20 miles of Princeton.
Shadow in the reaching out of my control.
what's striking to me is the structure of the arguments around this right now very much look like the structure of the arguments back then, in that there is this kind of temptation to advocate some immediate sort of intervention to deal with what is seen as an immediate problem. And in this case, it's a bad situation in Iraq. I don't think there's anyone who thinks that's not the case. And without asking the then what question, the then what question. And the then what question is the question that was failed to ask the first time around. You wrote this fantastic article called The 51st State about what the Iraq occupation might look like that was precisely about the then what question. Do you think we've gotten better as a society at asking that question?
I think there is some sobering effect of the last dozen years and people looking at Iraq now, looking at Afghanistan and saying, for what have we lost these lives, sacrificed all the money and international standing and stains to our honor with Guantanamo and the torture and all the rest. So we maybe have been forced to some sort of that. And I think also it is, as you well know from this show and sort of the business of public opinion, there really is a almost irresistible compulsion. If you say, here is a problem, here's problem X, therefore we must have solution Y. And if the answer is, there isn't really any good solution, or at least if there's a solution, it's not one that our cruise missiles and our drones and all the rest are likely to produce. And since we are so much better at the military aspect of things than almost anything else, it really is hard to break that circuit and say, well, here's a problem, therefore let's solve it with the main tool we have.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because I was thinking about today that I was not working cable news in 2003 in the run-up to the last invasion, and now I do. And I do see how, you know, the images we show, which are these horrifying images of ISIS riding in with these black flags, terrifying, right? And there's a certain kind of frenetic excitement around a crisis and violence that even in a non-ideological sense, you wonder if that lays the groundwork for people to be thinking in terms of military intervention as the solution.
Oh, and I think you're right. You've written about this, and there is the immediacy and the permanent crisis mode of cable TV where you think people are suffering around the world. We have to do something. Yeah. And the next stage of what will it mean if we take this step? Is that going to really make a difference a week from now, a month from now? So it is there's a laudable part of this human desire to do something, in addition to sort of the crowd frenzy part and the fact that as Americans in the 21st century, we know we have a military and that's the main thing we have. So we're tempted to use it. But maybe we're seeing some resistance just based on what's happened over the past dozen years.
I think we are. James Fallows from the Atlantic. And it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Workday goes by a lot faster. I feel better, I have more energy, and I don't get that 2:30 feeling anymore where I'm like, oh no, didn't I want to be a novelist? Before I know it, I'm at home watching Netflix in the fetal position on my bed.
Some offices are rethinking assigned seating altogether, letting employees work however and wherever they want. The result? Surprising collaborations and a free exchange of ideas. But if you're not ready to give up your traditional desk entirely, experts say you can still get some of the benefits of fetal position desks with a few simple exercises.
We recommend that all workers take 20 to 30 minutes out of every day to write the word suicide over and over again in a Google Doc. Make that a part of your routine.
I've tried a fetal position desk myself, and I can say it's a great way to get through the fucking day.
Thanks, Aaron. I hate my job.
The CIA claims only three Bin Laden figures were made before the project was canceled.
comes back the stone wall that joins us to Wilma's garden. From here, I get a sweep of the whole scene. I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk and as long as I can see. The more state police have arrived. They're drawing up a cordon in front of the pit. About 30 of them. No need to push the crowd back now. They're willing to keep their distance. The captain's conferring with someone. Can't quite see who. Oh, yes, I believe it's Professor Pearson. Yes, it is. Now they've parted, and the professor moves around one side, studying the object while the captain and two policemen advance with something in their hands. I can see it now. It's a white handkerchief tied to a pole. Flag of truce. Those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute. Something's happening. Some shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against a mirror. What's that? There's a jet of flame springing from the mirror and at least right at the advancing men. He strikes them head on. Lord, they're turning into flames. Ah! The whole field's caught up by the woods, the fires, the gas tanks, and the automobiles spreading everywhere. Coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill. Evidently, there's some difficulty with our field transmission. However, we will return to that point at the earliest opportunity.
Instance has its own issues. I mean, certainly there are very different issues in terms of the hospital system in Rio, which is very poor, and the education system, which is much better when you get to the high school and collegiate level, but is terrible by all accounts, by all observation at the elementary school level. So the issues are very different, but what is synthesizing them all is the seeing of just billions of dollars in public funds go into building unnecessary new stadiums for the World Cup, not to mention infrastructure projects, which are largely geared to wealthy tourists coming in for the World Cup, as opposed to these pressing concerns of healthcare, education, and the like. And that is why you hear these slogans where people say, we want FIFA-quality wages, we want FIFA-quality schools, a direct reference to FIFA's just mind-thudding metronomic demand, where they keep saying, well, your stadiums aren't good enough, we want FIFA-quality stadiums.
Our entire broadcasting facility. View of the gravity of the situation, believing that radio has a responsibility to serve in the public interest.
Casey Kasem, best known for hosting American Top 40 Countdown and for being the voice of Shaggy on the cartoon show Scooby-Doo, has died at the age of 82. Beyond his radio work, Kasem was an Arab-American activist who championed a number of progressive causes, from veganism to fighting media stereotyping of Arabs. In the 1980s, Kasem was arrested at an anti-nuclear protest in Nevada and slept outside in Los Angeles to draw attention to homelessness. Casey Kasem had suffered Lewy body disease, a form of dementia. He died Sunday at a hospital in Washington.
A quick thrust and it'll all be open. Oh, wait a minute. I see something on top of the cylinder. Oh, no, it's nothing but a shadow. Now the troops are on the edge of the Wilmot Farm. 7,000 armed men closing in on an old metal tube. A tub, rather. Well, wait, that wasn't a shadow. It's something moving. Solid metal, kind of a shield-like affair, rising up out of the cylinder, going higher and higher.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Hey, listen, thanks for being a part of the Micropirate Experience. I'm Furious George in the house with DJ Halbie Hurton, Albia Tron, and DJ Little Eddie Abbey. I'm Furious George signing off here, throwing some music at you. That's some Lou Kid in the background. We've also had lots of craziness from Flying Lotus and others. We also have been throwing out there some Orson Welles clips from that old War of the Worlds thing, which we happen to bring up every time Dick Cheney seems to be poking his evil, pointy-headed head out. That's why we've been bringing back some of that fun stuff. Listen, if you like what you're hearing, check out furiousg.blogspot.com or go to wcomfm.org where you can support Micropower Radio. WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carborough, that's low power Micropower Radio. And you are experiencing it right now, either through the old school radio dial or on the internets. So thanks for doing what you're doing. I'm Furious. I'll be back. See ya.
Actually rearing up on a sort of metal framework. Now it's reaching above the trees and the searchlights are on it. Hold on.
Or maybe we don't need your advice now.
I
got this mail from people saying, oh, it's the Stalag, you're going to lock up people who disagree. That's not my point. My point is that if you were really grossly in error on this particular topic, on the likely consequences of military operations in this country, then at least you should have a little bit of deference or a little bit of reticence in saying, okay, I was wrong then, but for other reasons, I think, you know, that this I can make a point now. So,
incredible as it may seem, both the observations of science and the evidence of our eyes lead to the inescapable assumption that those strange beings who landed in the Jersey farmlands tonight are the vanguard of an invading army from the planet Mars. The battle which took place tonight at Grover Mills has ended in one of the most startling defeats ever suffered by an army in modern times. 7,000 men armed with rifles and machine guns pitted against a single fighting machine of the invaders from Mars. 120 known survivors. The rest strewn over the battle area from Grover's Mill to Plainsboro, crushed and trampled to death under the metal feet of the monster, or burned to cinders by its heat ray. The monster is now in control of the middle section of New Jersey and has effectively cut the state through its center. Communication lines are down from Pennsylvania to the Atlantic Ocean. Railroad tracks are torn and service from New York to Philadelphia discontinued except routing some of the trains through Allerton and Phoenixville. Highways to the north, south, and west are clogged with frantic human traffic. Police and army reserves are unable to control the mad flight. By morning, the fugitives will have swelled Philadelphia, Camden, and Trenton. Is estimated to twice their normal population. Martial law prevails throughout New Jersey and eastern Pennsylvania.
Wolfowitz and Bremer opine on what to do in Iraq.
And what's striking to me is the structure of the arguments around this right now very much look like the structure of the arguments back then, in that there is this kind of temptation to advocate some immediate sort of intervention to deal with what is seen as an immediate problem. And in this case, it's a bad situation in Iraq. I don't think there's anyone who thinks that's not the case. And without asking the then what question, the then what question. And the then what question is the question that was failed to ask the first time around. You wrote this fantastic article called The 51st State about what the Iraq occupation might look like. That was precisely about the then what question. Do you think we've gotten better as a society at asking that question?
I think there is some sobering effect of the last dozen years and people looking at Iraq now, looking at Afghanistan and saying, for what have we lost these lives, sacrificed all the money and international standing and stains to our honor with Guantanamo and the torture and all the rest. So we maybe have been forced to some sort of that. And I think also it is, as you well know from this show and sort of the business of public opinion, there really is a almost irresistible compulsion. If you say, here is a problem, here's problem yep. X, therefore we must have solution Y. And if the answer is, there isn't really any good solution, or at least if there's a solution, it's not one that our cruise missiles and our drones and all the rest are likely to produce. And